Change happens. How we respond to change can make or break us and our careers. Join us for an intimate insight into how senior business leaders face change, the good, the bad, and everything in between. Because whether we like it or not, change happens.
This podcast series, Change Happens, is a conversation with senior business leaders on leading through change, lessons learned along the way, and how they're coping during the current COVID-19 crisis. Today, I've asked the King of Pizza, Don May, MD and Group CEO of Domino's Pizza, to take us through his experiences as a leader during the pandemic. Don's 33-year career with Domino's, where he started delivering pizza and worked his way up to CEO, is one that celebrates many firsts associated with Domino's under his stewardship. Not just the ultimate learn-on-the-job success story, but a true innovator with exceptional entrepreneurial skills. Domino's was the first company to introduce plant-based pizza in Australia, moved quickly into a permanent work-from-home or work-from-anywhere policy, and was decisive enough to develop out of a slowed COVID-19 global trade slump into sourcing Australian ingredients by adopting a sovereign mindset for making pizzas during the pandemic. I look forward to exploring how Don and Domino's Pizza are managing this current crisis and beyond. Hi, Don. How are you and how have you personally been throughout the last few months?
I'm great. Thank you, Janelle. Thank you for hosting me here. I suppose just like everybody else, it's been an incredible roller coaster from the most dramatic fear of where does the bottom hit in that peak during March, April, around the world, because we're in 9 different countries, but then wrestling with all the growth that's now what we're currently experiencing because of, how we've embraced the environment around us.
So I know that we all know that many businesses in hospitality have been hit particularly hard through this time, but somehow at Domino's you've been able to make some quick changes to the way that you operate. You've managed to really leverage your delivery model and maintain staff and at times grow your sales. So can you take us through what kinds of changes you've made and what's been the result of those changes?
Yeah, we are fortunate that a lot of the work that we were already doing as a brand has put us in the right place at the right time during COVID. So, there's some really big things like our online ordering platform, how driven we were already in delivery, which are two big drivers. But what we did pivot really quickly in is that we went, from start to finish within 6 days once we predicted that, it was going to actually, before the word pandemic was used, that we should be implementing a zero contact delivery processes, which means that through the whole ordering experience, the only hands that will get to touch a pizza once it leaves an oven are those of the customer. So that was, originally when we were sitting with the team, it was, oh, this probably take us 6 weeks. And we said, well, we may have 6 weeks, and we did in 6 days, which is also how we've now responded to zero contact car park delivery, which goes after the pickup or carry out customer, which is somebody we lost in the first epicenter. We got a lot of delivery, but we didn't always compensate enough in that very early period, the loss of the carry out customer. And now with car park delivery, which is like a concierge service, no extra charge, but we put it in the back seat of your car or in your boot with gloves, with masks, and we're doing that in Melbourne right now.
So, Don, as you say, something like that might have taken something like 6 weeks, maybe on a good run. You managed to do that in 6 days. What is it, do you think, about you and the organisation that allowed you to make that kind of material shift in that short of a period of time?
Yeah, so embracing technology and learning over the last, since 2005, 2006, we studied a lot of agile practices. We put them in place. And when you're running a business agile, it doesn't mean all day you're running at full capacity of that agility, but you continually pulsing in and out of that, and you build up habits, or what we call in our business muscle memory. And you'll burn people out if you're completely agile 100% of the time, because you do need some cadence, you do need some normality. But when you do ask the organisation to rise, because you've got all the practices and the muscle memories there, we've found that they do. And from food crises where many years ago we had bone in beef, which, wasn't going to do any major damage, but still was not a pleasant eating experience. And we had all of the beef in Australia removed within 24 hours and a complete new menu without beef seamlessly. And that's just an example on that side, never alone on a technology side. So, It's, you know, we've done many trips to Silicon Valley. We've been fortunate enough to have a lot of coaches from that. We've had business partners work with us. We studied as a group books and built that muscle memory over the last decade into the business.
That's a fantastic set of examples. I know that you and your senior team are very interested in self-improvement literature. I believe that you've been reading Atomic Habits, James Clear's book, amongst many others, going back to all those first principles around working agile, making behavioural change. How do you build that kind of constant view to improving and personal and professional development into the day-to-day psyche of everyone?
Well, I think part of it comes because I studied to be a school teacher, but I think, you know, as a business, I think all leaders have got to lead by example. So building a reading culture, building a development. So we go away on retreats and often there's one book, a couple of videos, sometimes two books that we will make compulsory reading going into that retreat as sort of like a bare minimum for leadership. And then personally, if you were ever coming to my home for a dinner or if you ever came to one of my Coffee with Don sessions, I would always be handing out books and writing something on the front about what were some of the things, key things I got out of it. I typically would, that's the only way I'd write on a book because for me, I don't like to change the way people read that book because I've highlighted it everywhere. But I do think that, you know, whether you're watching video content like TED Talks and YouTube videos, studying people, or whether you're reading papers or books, you're having a personal conversation in your head with those people. And so that's what we've been trying to drive in the organization is that whether someone's not even alive today or, you know, some of the most extraordinary brains on the planet. And by reading their material, you know, you can get decades, if not 6-12 months worth of epicenter knowledge, and you have that conversation with that individual when you read that book. And it doesn't mean you always agree with them either. You may take a different perception. But, you know, trying to feed that in the organization and then bring a lot of outside people in, because we're quite an insular culture and we run very fast, and there's always a danger that we believe all of our own information and that actually we could be misreading, and we've seen that in the past.
It's fantastic. I know that you were studying to be a high school teacher before, so it sounds like that passion for training and educating people seems to have permeated into the pizza world for you.
Yeah, totally. And you know, we say Domino's every day is a training day. Domino's every day is a day of learning and development. You know, you're either providing it or you're receiving it, but every day is a training day. And, you know, at our best, we do that very well, and at our worst, we reflect and say, gee, we could do that a lot better.
Don, you know, being in the delivery business and quick service restaurants, the idea of working from anywhere seems a little difficult to get my head around. How have you managed to do that in your organisation? What sorts of changes have you made in that regard?
We were really early on to close down the office because the thought, and even our rally, they were almost at the same time. So we would normally have had 1,500 people at a conference on the Gold Coast in and around that time of the epicentre. And we cancelled those rallies and to, you know, inside the organisation, to a lot of people's horror, because it's like, boy, are we overreacting? But being in the food business, we couldn't be associated with a cluster. We just couldn't, you know, when you think about something like a pandemic and then you were one of the contributors, doesn't go very well with a brand. So sometimes when it comes to food safety and human safety, you've got to be paranoid and you've got to act in a more extreme sense. Now, because we're a technology, I mean, we're a pizza company. I don't want anybody to confuse that. But the best way to drive retail and the best way to drive retail pizza the last 15 years has been through technology. Yeah, there was a few little things like the bandwidth for data scientists to work from home or producing TV commercials and graphic material required an immense amount of broadband and bandwidth, and so we had to build some things in there, some security, and then the culture. The culture was, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
And how would you describe the culture and what ways have you had to evolve that culture?
Yeah, so first it was denial. So there was a fair bit of pushback in the business that, like, this is an overreaction. And we had a little taste of that back with SARS where in hindsight it didn't play out for the worst in places like Australia. So the things we spent money on, well, I always say they're an investment, but you could be critical and say they were a waste of money because we didn't use them. So there was this denial, and then there was a very, very sharp you know, because it just came on so quickly around the world. I mean, we were going from days to all of a sudden we'd closed France and New Zealand, and they were just not even conceivable 3 or 4 days before. So there was all of a sudden, was the whole business going to close? And you know, how do you survive this, and how long will this last? And so that fear period was actually when we were the most agile, the most extreme change in our business in many, many different ways. And then we moved into the fatigue phase, where it's kind of like, well, we all survived, and actually business is really good, and we're all whole. In fact, we didn't lose a single franchisee throughout the whole experience, which for the size of our business, we normally would have somebody leave the business. And yet we not only held everyone together, nobody left. So, and now I think now in the fatigue, we're in the what I'm called the rallying phase now, that this is our new normal. We just take a position. None of us have a crystal ball, but we take the position that we're going to be living with COVID for 1 to 3 years. It's a longer thought process. So therefore don't, you know, whilst we do a lot of short-term things in the moment, build it properly straight after. Whereas if you don't have that long view, there's always a risk you just keep it in the fragile duct tape solution up front. So yeah, that's and that's where we are now. We're in the rallying phase right now, rallying around this is our 3-year window and what sort of how are we going to drive this 3-year window?
Well, I think also if you take that longer term perspective, so if you anchor yourself in a situation of we're going to go back to what we knew soon enough, we just got to wait this out. I think you're denying yourself the opportunity to really think about what you might do on a more permanent basis to innovate and maybe set the tone for change rather than waiting for it to happen to you and then trying to figure out what goes on then. So I think, you know, setting up that this is it for the long term, so now what, creates a frame of innovation.
That's exactly right. And we say that hope is not a strategy, it's a bonus when it comes along. And so plan for the truisms that you do know today. And then if something happens sooner or better, then that's a complete bonus.
You just mentioned franchisees. It's an interesting set of stakeholders that you have to manage. So in addition to shareholders and employees, you obviously work with a large network of franchisees across the globe. That, I mean, to me, that represents a whole lot of risk, right? How can you be sure that they're going to hold to the brand that you want, particularly with so many unknowns and so many changes? In your view, what have you found to be the critical success factors in forming solid long-term relationships with your franchisees?
Yeah, and I'm really glad you're touching on this, because coming into COVID, there was a global rallying cry that franchising wasn't healthy, that it needed to be far more legislated. And there was, you know, and not just in Australia, but in many locations around the world, and which was contrary to all the statistics, but that was a populist theme that was running around the world. And I think what the pandemic has shown is that, I mean, we're a franchisee as well, and we were able to quickly access, you know, what was going on in China, what had gone on in Italy, how they were looking at their curve. And we followed almost similar behavior in the rest of our business, depending on how locked down you were as a business. So, you know, the reality of franchising is it made us far more resilient. We kept each other whole throughout all this. And to do that, it's a trust thing that, you know, when we did rally quickly and we stood beside the franchisees when they were closed, for example, we'd say to them very calmly, look, this is not a moment for us to do well, it's to do good, and we're going to be standing right next to you. Whatever it takes, we're going to get through this. So don't live in fear. Use the period, if you're closed, for example, to invest in what it's going to be looking like when you're open, because you're going to get through this. We're going to help you through this. And then we're going to flourish. And so I think it really strengthened a lot of our culture, the way, you know, we use Teams and Zooms around the world to, I mean, I touch more franchisees now, and all the leadership touch more franchisees on a more frequent basis, be it not physically, through all of this media. And I think it really, really drew us together around our purpose and our values. And then we lived our values, because you can talk about values, but sometimes it's unfortunate, but an extreme circumstance puts the values to test.
And I think your point of saying, you know, this is a time for us to do good rather than do well. And the reality is, I think more often than not, in doing good, one does do well. I don't think it necessarily does need to be a trade-off, at least not in the longer term anyway. So is that something that you have found to be true as well?
Absolutely. You know, in that very early phase, from everybody, you know, your business partners, how you treat your business partners, like landlords, suppliers, everybody, you know, you've got a budget, bonuses are thrown out at that very moment. You say, you know what? for the longevity of this business, this is just not a time to be looking at those old. It's hard. If you're in marketing, you've built all these beautiful TV commercials and they're all now completely irrelevant to the environment. You've got to throw them away. That's quite an emotional process to go through and to make people feel okay about that. In fact, they're champions of it by doing it rather than hanging on. And that's when that agility kicks in. And there's systems too, you know, where we run our strategy document in the business, the way, which is very, very agile. And that leads to some of that, you know, positive behavior that we want. We use this opportunity to introduce things that we've been struggling to get introduced, one example is our white paper culture, which is, you know, getting ideas up and ideations up into the group through a system, not just random emails here and there that just frustrate and distract.
And you've mentioned to me, I mean, I know that there has been some really interesting innovations and world records that you've sort of been setting in delivery time. You talked about Project 310. Is that related to this culture and behaviour of testing fast and learning?
It is. Yeah, so the phases that we've been through in technology, the first phase was bringing more or less an online, you know, shopping centre together with our originally our one digital platform, which is our online ordering platform, which then followed into apps. The second generation of our technology and experience was around becoming a great marketer. So we got the data and we started marketing very well and we built our owned media platform. But more recently, the last 4 or 5 years, we've really spent, and we're spending more money than ever before now on what we call co-pilots or operational technology. And the co-pilots are built along the idea that these are AI and sometimes they're hardware. If a team member's Tony Stark, we're trying to build them the Java suit and make the execution better. Something like Pizza Checker is an example of that, which improves the quality of execution. And then we have many other ones with productivity. And so that's, you know, that's the phase of technology that we're building today.
One of the big differentiators for Domino's is that you own your delivery arm. I'm interested in the role of aggregators like Uber Eats and Deliveroo and how or why perhaps you think that ownership of that delivery arm is so important for the success of your business.
Yeah, you know, the aggregators play an important role in aggregating those who haven't invested in technology and creating a marketplace. And it's a little bit like what Google or Facebook have done in their areas. We think of aggregators as frenemies, just like a social media or a search engine or YouTube or so on, in that unlike television or our owned media, we do share our data with these platforms. And so you've got to play to win in each of those platforms, in which we think about with the aggregators. And they're really just another search engine. But what we will not give up is the Domino's experience, because nobody delivers like Domino's. We're far more efficient than anybody else. You know, a lot of these companies are giving away, I mean, all they're serving is a product, and they're not even in control of how the standard of that product arrives. They literally are giving up everything other than that bit of brand and the origin of the product. So, and if you look at any retail experience, it's product, service, and image. And we can't give up that service. We can't give up that image, and we're far more efficient. We won't give that away, you know, and we still get some of the data. So these are important pillars that are not compromisable today. And we're very passionate about these things.
Yeah, it's really clear to me that you're clear on where your value proposition is, where you have the most value. So that's fantastic. And then quite fearless in facing into anything else or outside of that, which is fantastic. I'm interested in talking about customers and consumer preferences. Our attitudes and consumer sentiment and preferences are shifting rapidly. When I think about consumers looking for healthier eating options, I know Domino's has really led the healthier product innovation in the world of pizza. When I think about your footprint in 9 different countries and how fast consumer preferences are shifting, how do you make sure that you continue to stay relevant to consumers across a global landscape and stay, if not in line with their expectations, even ahead of them? How does that work for you?
Yeah, so you do have to be careful of getting ahead of. The big thing here is you've got to once again know who you are and what are your brand attributes and then how are you going to bring something to life. So, for example, customers will say to us, you know, the number one reason I buy Domino's is a treat, but they'll also say sometimes it's the number one reason why I stopped buying Domino's because it was too much of a treat. And so the fine line of that is that they'd say, look, I want to eat better, but whatever you do, don't take my treat away from me. So we often talk about indulgent health. Yeah, well, we always said if you could eat that the most indulgent donut and still be healthy, then that would be like nirvana. And so we tried to do the same thing with pizza. So, and these things flow in different trends and different times. You know, there was a phase of low fat. So we would measure that by removing what we call the stain of regret in the bottom of a pizza box. And that is that you love eating your pizza, but you get to the end and you see this oil stain at the bottom of the box. And that's a reason not to buy pizza next time, because you have this, did I just eat that? And we were really successful in removing that. Ironically, now with the keto diet, and does fat really make you fat, and, you know, and so on, and that there's a shift in changing in that. So we've got to ebb and flow with these things. But, yeah, talking about plant-based meats, how do you bring a product to market that is plant-based, that is still actually natural, because some of the plant-based foods actually are worse than the natural ingredient. So you're trying to see one audience and alien another one with, for example, we try to be preservative-free. So how do you do that with some of the plant-based foods? And how do you make sure that they really are indulgent, that they are still non-compromised? Because if you bring a compromised product to market, then really you failed what you were meant to be, which is a treat. So, yeah, all of these things, whether it's been gluten-free, whether it's been vegan menus, the most successful promotion in Australia's history was what we called the Taste of Colour promotion. I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. And that was that, you know, when you squint with most fast food, it's all browns and yellows. I mean, it's all processed food. And we wanted to show the consumer how much we were bringing real food has colour, and, you know, how we were showing that at Domino's, our road meant that we were continually pulling natural foods on the product, which were colourful and tasty, because natural food is tasty, tastier often than preservative food. So that was a huge campaign. I think we shared with the shareholders, we were up 28% in 1 month of the launch of that, and we're not a new brand. And it just showed how you could bring that treat in a way, in a story, and particularly with females, because we were losing female customers leading into that, and bam. You know, mum's the gatekeeper to the home, and she opened the doors because she said, okay, that resonates with me, and I'm going to put Domino's to the test.
Well, I can honestly tell you that I have not heard those three sentences at all, much less in one answer to a question. The taste of colour, the stain of regret, and indulgent health. I've definitely learnt a bit from that answer, Don.
Thank you.
Now, when we spoke before this discussion, you said something to me that really stuck in my mind. You said, we like people with opposing opinions so we can find our own truth. I really like that sentence, but I'm keen to know, what exactly did you mean by that?
Yeah, I've never lived the other way of moving in and out of companies, because my whole working life has been in this one business. And so it's hard for me to get my head around how someone's got to build all of that muscle memory, knowledge, and sync with a company when they're only there for 5 years and deliver a lasting result. You know, it doesn't sit naturally with me, although there's so many professional, successful CEOs who seem to be able to do it. But for me, when you're building something that's built to last over a really long period of time, having, you know, a lot of leadership, and if you look at the tenure of all of our senior leadership, it's material. It's, you know, you've got people that are 10 to 25 years, 33 years, And yet they're all so young, because they all start in this business so young. You know, I'm 51 and I still feel like I'm really young.
So tell me, I'm trying to figure out, you know, was this a conscious mindset that you had from start, which it sounds like it did, or did it sort of morph over time? Because what shifted in you to moving from a part-time job as a delivery guy to making this a long-term career path? Do you remember a moment when you're like, you know what, this is it for me, or did it just kind of creep up on you?
Yeah, it did creep up, and there's many pivoting times that then cemented it to be more real. You know, I literally took a full-time job in the original business, Silvio's, because I just didn't finish my degree, ironically. I thought I was going to start a new degree the next year, and I had 9 months to kill, which in hindsight sounds really silly. Why don't you finish that 9 months and go to the next place? But in my view as well, it was just the next natural thing. You know, here I still am. But as time goes on, When you're a public company CEO, you do realize that as much as I'm a large shareholder, I am a paid employee at the whim of shareholders and all the stakeholders. You know, I'm a servant leader. That's my job, is to serve this business. You know, with that, there could be things that happen unintentionally that then I could be a casualty of that. And so the way I'm comfortable in my own shoes is that I hope I'm here for a lot longer, but if I wasn't, I'm also not fearful of what else I could do in my life.
I'm interested in your appetite around risk. I love that one of the Domino's values is crush convention, that there's a difference between having a failure and being a failure. And I think that's something that many of us perhaps struggle with. You know, we want to avoid taking risks with the, possible chance that we could fail. And what does that mean about us? And I feel like that's really a clearly separated thing for you. You've won accolades for entrepreneurial leadership. You champion innovation top to bottom at Domino's. Where is that confidence and come from to take those kinds of risks, you know, and have there been times where it just didn't pay off for you?
Yeah, well, when you take a lot of risks, then of course you get a lot of things that don't work, and they're constant. You know, just in the last 7 days, one of our team got a brilliant social media idea. It started out fantastically. We were celebrating, and then it shifted on us publicly, and you know, that particular person in the organization felt hurt the next day. And meanwhile, I'm writing a private email saying, congratulations, you know, I'm so proud that you did this. You went out there, you fiercely brought an idea to life out of nowhere in 24 hours. And so the key to that, and we learned this once again from our trip to Silicon Valley, is it's actually harder to celebrate failure, but you have to if you want to get more risk in the organization. You've got to be grounded in the reality that it doesn't always work, but if you do post-analysis, you know, one of the worst things I watch in organizations is the benefit of hindsight, and people crush ideas that failed with the benefit of hindsight, and therefore people become risk averse. But if you celebrate, you know, that you push the envelope, and because you're that kind of person, you by on the law of averages are going to get more right than wrong, because you're going to continue to push, you're fearless. We check and learn. Why did, you know, there is still a post-analysis of why it didn't work. Organizations need to learn from what it is, but celebrate that learning. That's the benefit that came from that. And without that risk, you didn't get the learning. And then, you know, more often though, once you do build up all that muscle memory and habit around it, you're going to get even more of them right. Now, me personally, one of the benefits of being a public company is having a very strong board, very deep in governance. We have those who, the entrepreneurs in the group, and then we have those who measure the risk. So you've got to have those balances out. You've got to have very strong opinions in the room who are the anti-risk in a sense, like they're running it through the legal filters, they're running it through, you know, brand damage filters, they're running it through financial filters of the downside. Because without that, I scare myself sometimes that there's some ideas that maybe just are not right for who we are.
And do you see it at the time when you've got one of these brilliant Don ideas that you maybe doesn't get over the line or get the resounding support you might have hoped for from the board or whomever else? And in hindsight, if you look back and go, that was probably right.
Yeah, yes. And so most of the ideas aren't my ideas. I just become one of the champions to support it based once it's got through that more or less that white paper process and there's enough thought and consensus and buy-in. I'm the face of Domino's, but most of the ideas in the organization come from all the great people in our organization, and I'm just one of the cheerleaders. And I can help cut through all of the bureaucracy. And I mean, I had a call this morning where it was, you know, we got a little bit bureaucratic in the business where someone who was taking a big risk and other peers were trying to bring them back down against that. And my job was to say, no, we're going to protect the risk taker here. Because otherwise they won't be a risk taker, and we will sort out the process of why did we get to some of this bureaucracy and conflict that was potentially avoidable rather than the other way around, because that's what's important. It's that culture of encouragement that, hey, you just got beat up over the weekend because your idea somehow didn't go through the right channels and you got a few noses out of joint, but don't stop being who you are. Let's just fix how we would have got the channels right.
I love that. I had the good fortune of spending some time in Silicon Valley myself earlier this year, at a time where we actually were allowed to travel. It feels so long ago. But I remember speaking to some venture capitalists there, and they said, we take failure as a badge of honour. And when we speak to people that we want to invest in or their organisations, we ask them where they've failed. And unless they've got a few up their sleeve, we won't back them because it means they haven't taken the risk. They haven't learnt from those. They haven't checked and learned, as you said. So I thought it was really eye-opening for me, who's probably actively worked to avoid failure, to see that as a badge of honour was really interesting.
Yeah, and so we the words we're using, it's not okay to fail in a sense. Like, we're not trying to go out there and fail all over the place. We're taking risks to win. But in the event that we do, yes, all the value is in the learning and so on, and we celebrate it in that way. That's what encourages it, right? The heroes in the business are often supported as the biggest risk takers.
So, Don, what surprised you during this period of time?
Yeah, if you would have asked me pre the pandemic, as a full tax-paying company, following all the laws of the land, that it was a privilege to trade, I would have told you, no, it was a right to trade. It's a democracy and we're doing everything right, so who could take that away from us? What we very, very quickly learned in that late March, early April, is that there were five stakeholders who had the ability to take away that privilege if we didn't nurture those relationships and work very, very hard. And the five were, first of all, our own team members. If they didn't feel safe, they wouldn't rock up to work. And if they didn't rock up to work, we didn't have a business to run because we need it. Our customers, they needed to feel safe that, we weren't putting anybody at risk, that the practices we were talking about were real. Our own franchisees, their own trust in the brand. We saw in France, we've got a little bit of a divided thing there where there were different epicenters in the country and some would have been legal if we wanted them to trade and others were saying, well, you have to let me trade, otherwise I'll be legal against you, because it was that passionate with how dramatic it was in France. So then you've got the government. The government, well, we've clearly seen that they closed this in New Zealand we've seen quite strong measures from government to manage the pandemic. And then finally, the whole community spirit that goes beyond the customers, that even stakeholders in the community that aren't your customers that may take a view. And there's a little bit of that in New Zealand too, where one of the large competitors that wasn't able to trade rallied the government that we shouldn't be allowed to trade during that. So that was kind of an interesting experience for us. We'll never forget this, that we have a mission mindset now to keep all of those five stakeholders fully informed of all the processes and why we're doing what we're doing and how we're doing it, or putting communication out to customers or government. It's that anybody who trades through this pandemic, it's a privilege, and don't abuse that privilege and be very generous as a result of that, because there's underemployed, unemployed, under trading or not trading businesses. And if you are trading and have the privilege to do so, then you better be very generous in all of your actions.
I love that. So shifting from a view of seeing business as a right, seeing business as a privilege, means you have a mission mindset, which translates to a behavior of generosity. Is that what you would distill that as?
Absolutely. That is 100% correct. That we need to lean as little as possible on government. We can do so much more rather than taking as few as possible those handouts. There's going to be some in different forms sometimes, that that those on the front line, feed the front line, those are in need, through donations of money for organizations and individuals that are suffering. To our own people, if we're doing well right now because of the hard work they've done, make sure that they are being paid their bonuses. And I'm proud to say at Domino's that our team members will get pay rises this year because they've done such an extraordinary job and they deserve that. They should share in that, just like shareholders have and all the other business partners and stakeholders have. So, it's a time to do good and well now. So it's to do both. But through the well, just keep channeling that back to those stakeholders, because it's such a privilege and literally deer in the headlights privilege, that you see the fear when that governments are deciding about lockdowns or team members may not want to come to work. Very, very passionate about it.
I love it. It's a real humility to a business mindset, which is great to see.
I also think what's been, and it shouldn't be surprising, but how quickly we adapt both good and bad to what's going on around us. And what I mean by good and bad is that the good news is mentally, I think people have just so quickly shifted and adapt. The bad side of that is often they're missing the opportunity because they're not looking at it with the same fresh eyes of the circumstances that are around us. Business success and wealth and the ability to do so good in our communities come from that really wide awareness that as much as we're now fitting into the new normal quite quickly, it isn't a long-term normal. This is still a moment in time that may last 1 to 3 years. At the end of the pandemic, then there will be a longer cadence of that normal versus this 3 year of in and out of lockdowns and change and shift. And because who would have predicted Melbourne a month ago? You could have predicted it was going to happen somewhere, but the fact that it came on so fast in Melbourne again, it's surprising how people just adapt and normalize and then miss, for the bad and the good, they miss these big opportunities that are on the table to pivot to and run at. We have a culture coach at Domino's who's an outside person who's worked with us for 30 years, Bernie Kelly, and his current program is Run to the Raw. In other words, run to the fear. If Don's asking you all to take the biggest risks in our company history with data and calculated, be fearless, be bold, be brave, have courage. because we're going to really, really support that. And there's enough shifting sands around us at the moment that feed that compared to when things are in the normal, you know, run-of-the-mill cadence that it runs at in real life.
Love that. So if I was to ask you to reach down and pull out a crystal ball that you might have sitting next to you and ask you the question, you know, what do you think in 5 years' time people will be saying about COVID-19 and what are your predictions for society and business as a result of what we're going through now? What would you say?
You know, I think that that there will be the winners and losers, and the strong will get stronger. That the big trends that were already pre-COVID just accelerated, things like, in our case, delivery and online ordering and the retail change that needed to happen, the priorities in life around, I do unfortunately think business travel will be affected, although I think people will still want to get back to social travel and experience the social things of life. I don't, you know, I think that will almost go back to where it was pre-COVID, if not even more for a moment in time, because we're so missing it. But businesses will be different. I think we've all learned a way to be more productive. We get a lot of CEOs on our global weekly calls to get these different views from big and large companies. We're very fortunate, Domino's, that we can attract those sort of quality speakers. And common theme is less space for office space, far less business travel. I can't see us ever returning to that if there is an ever. Rallying to health, speeding up at the moment. We're all appreciating our health and well-being. More than before because of what the pandemic's, you know, our immunity should be stronger and we should be healthier and so on. So I think those things will be the things that will be quite strong.
The last three fast questions on change to finish the podcast.
I'm going to finish up, if I can, with a more lighthearted fast three. So the first one is, what is a misconception that most people have about you?
Because of the success and the tenure that I've been here, that I'm a lot more in the business than people probably think, that in fact it's the great leaders of Domino's all through the organisation that are really doing the incredible work, and I'm the face of the company and I do want to know how everything works, but I lead the business. I actually don't manage it all day, every day. That there's a, you know, there's a whole network of incredible people here that are doing the real brilliance that's Domino's, and I just get the credit, you know, and trying to give more credit to more of the leaders, but it's just how it falls sometimes as a public company.
Very good. And what's one guilty pleasure?
Oh, I love fast food. I love pizza, but I love fried chicken. I love donuts. I love hamburgers. I love fries. I love fast food.
And what's one thing that you're absolutely hopeless at?
I'm not a person to dot the I's and cross the T's on it. I always like looking at the bigger picture. And lucky we've got great lawyers and around us to do all of that.
And look, I can't let you go without asking you the question. What's your favourite pizza?
Anything with pepperoni. I love pepperoni, pepperoni cheese, you know, jalapenos, mushrooms, but the base has to be all the varieties of pepperoni and cheese and very rich, rich sauce.
So, Don, look, I wanted to say thank you so much for your time today. Your passion is very clear. I've taken away many things from the conversation, and in no particular order, I think for me, doing good to do well and playing the long game, building an organisation that's there to last, has come through strongly. I love the view of, you know, treating every day as a training day and your clear mission to keep people developing and growing and learning and reading and building the muscle memory of the organization. Absolutely love celebrating those who take the, you know, chance to push the envelope and check and learn and creating that culture of encouragement. And finally, you know, I'm sure it wasn't really a call to action for us, but it certainly feels that way to me. Run to the raw. I'll definitely be taking that one forward with me as well. So thanks very much, Don, for your time, and all the very best too.
Thank you for taking the interest. Thanks, Janelle.
The Change Happens podcast from EY, a conversation on leading through change. Discover more where you get your podcasts.